Welcome to the Next Level Occupational Therapy Podcast. My name is Kara Welke, occupational therapist and creator of the Next Level Occupational Therapy platform. The goal of this podcast is to encourage, inspire, and motivate occupational therapy professionals to level up in their career, whether that be to start a new business, add a side job, and or to figure out how to be more satisfied in their current career. Hope you enjoy the show. Everyone to the Next Level Occupational Therapy Podcast. My name is Kara Welke, occupational therapist and creator of the Next Level Occupational Therapy platform. The goal of this podcast is to encourage, inspire, and motivate occupational therapy professionals to level up in their career, whether that be to start a new business, add a side job, and or to figure out how to be more satisfied in their current career. Thank you for listening to today's show, which is sponsored by our Therapy Business Builder program, where we help healthcare professionals start the business of their dreams from the ground up. Also, be sure to join our Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook group. And for even more support, guidance, and training, check out our Next Level Visionary Membership group. My goal is to interview occupational therapy professionals who have started their own business so that you can learn from those that have already been through the process. Today, I'm interviewing Chelsea Mazaros. I know I goofed that name up, so you'll have to pronounce it better. Chelsea started her career as an occupational therapist over 7 years ago after graduating with her master's in science, occupational therapy from Sacred Heart University. Initially, her career was focused on acute care with dedication to the ICU, then moving on to home care services with specialties in geriatrics, cognitive rehabilitation. Chelsea has a husband, Andrew, and two children. She is a Rhode Island native, born and raised, with a strong dedication to serving her local community. Chelsea started her practice at the end of 2019 with the idea of building better quality therapy options for at-risk populations. Initially, the practice was directed at home care therapy through contract work and private consulting for agencies. However, she's determined to bring new, innovative, and quality projects to her clients, including wellness programming, pediatrics, mobile outpatient, and private consulting for assisted living facilities. Much of Chelsea's drive and passion for her patients stems from her role as a mother. Chelsea has a son with complex medical needs who has required therapy since birth. She understands the complex nature of the healthcare system and what it takes to advocate for her clients. This is evident through her dedication to quality initiatives. Currently, Chelsea is pursuing her PhD at Concordia University of Chicago, and she is also a professor at Worcester State University in the occupational therapy program. And to top it off, Chelsea is doing starting a falls program, and she's starting it tonight, but she's created this amazing falls prevention program that she markets and utilizes with assisted living facilities. So we'll also be talking about that today on the podcast. So let's first start, Chelsea. Just tell us about your current business.
Hi, so thank you so much, Kara, for the opportunity. So my current business is called Superior Outcomes, and we started at the end of 2019, and we have essentially two branches of the program. We have the adult side and we have the pediatric side. The adult side includes consulting through Med A services, mobile Med B, outpatient type style services, but going to patients' homes. And we do work with assisted livings throughout the state, helping them create new policies and do a lot of fall prevention. And then on our pediatric side, that is where we are seeing kiddos in the community, especially children who have medical complexity, who really shouldn't be or are not able to go out and to receive services. So we're currently working with schools to be able to facilitate IEPs in the home setup. We are working doing as out-of-network clinicians. So we work with a lot of different insurances through that out-of-network pay. And then we also do private consulting and private PACE patients as well. And we're looking to kind of partner with different preschools in the community because a lot of those children are not getting outreach right now. Here in the state of Rhode Island, a lot of the services are being really held back, especially in pediatrics, between transitioning from, you know, the IEPs, it's not really happening. Outreach programs like that, then the nets are just too wide. And a lot of these children are, you know, getting totally left behind. We hosted a free screen for kiddos a couple weeks ago, just so that developmentally they could be seen by an OT, a PT, or speech therapist. And we were surprised at how many children came in with, and the level of difficulty and the level of deficits that we were seeing that are not on an IEP and have not been picked up for a 504. So it really reinforced to us that we have to find ways to access these kids in the community. So we try really hard on both sides to do as much innovative work that we can in order to be able to increase our accessibility so that we can really help our community.
Awesome. How many staff or independent contractors or employees do you have?
So we have 16 independent contractors that work with us between both sides and within PT, OT, and speech. So we do offer all three services. It just depends upon which side you're on. We do have one full-time office manager. Her name is Sam. She's like my right hand. I just don't really know what I would do without her. And then I'm actually really excited because we're going to be hiring a full-time supervisor on the pediatric side because as much as I love the pediatrics, it's not as much as my passion as adults and, you know, dementia care, which, you know, I have my specialty in that. And so if I really want to be able to focus and build these programs and do some online stuff, then I need to be able to kind of delegate some of, you know, the things that are less in my wheelhouse to other people. So we're finally in the place where we're going to be able to do that in like a month from now. So I'm really excited about that.
That's awesome. And when you're talking, I mean, you guys like do everything and you're not that old and you have a business and you have tons of staff. And a lot of times when we're helping therapists start their business, you know, we're like niche down, find one area. But you've been able to be so successful and you're like doing it all. Like, how did you manage that?
Well, I think that 2020 needs no introduction to how challenging it has been. So from the home health perspective where I started, PDGM was really an initiator for me to do what I'm doing now. I really struggled with the idea that therapists were being told that they were no longer value added because of the reimbursement system changing. So given that, I had really wanted to do, you know, private consulting work to help agencies know that their therapists are still extremely valuable, and then also contract service. Well, then COVID happened. So we started realizing that, you know, we had to pivot in order to survive. I could not be reliant upon contract or other agencies to be able to feed my business. And so that was what I realized, that if I wanted to succeed and I wanted to be able to do this as my full-time gig, I had to find a way to increase my accessibility and through direct service. Because in the state of Rhode Island, we do have direct service provisions in our Practice Act. So that was when, you know, the mobile outpatient piece really came into play. At the same time, personally, I was really struggling watching my son regress at an extremely challenging rate. This spring was awful in our house. It was so difficult to watch. And I knew that there was absolutely no way I was the only parent who felt like this. I couldn't get therapists to come to my house. There was no way for him to get what he needed. He lost all the structure from school. it was a disaster overall. So it was through that, you know, that kind of like emotional response that I was like, okay, no, we need to fix this and we're going to fix it, you know, by creating something. I have a platform. I'm lucky enough to have a platform. I'm blessed to have colleagues who have incredible pediatric experience. So we kind of set this piece up as a result of how the, how the environment and how the market was at that time. I think that if I didn't make pivots along the way and I didn't understand how the markets were changing, I don't think I could have done any of these things. And I'm really lucky because I'm surrounded by incredible people. You know, all of the staff that I have, I've either personally worked with and know the quality of their work, or, you know, they've been through some sort of like rigorous process in which I've been able to obtain the quality of their work. So if I didn't have that, there was no way that I could have done what I did in, you know, in the year of 2020. But I think, you know, every time something happens, my mom, like, would always say, like, look for the doers in a bad situation. So you can either be the person who sits and watches their, you know, business financials tank, as I did some days, especially in the months of March and April, like, oh my God, here it goes. It's going away. It's never coming back. Or you can pivot and you can adapt and you can recognize, I can have two niche markets and, you know, I'm going to set this niche market up over here. And it's going to operate almost independently. And I'm going to be, you know, and I'm also going to have this one over here and it's going to operate almost independently, you know, from each other. And that's okay. As long as you have the right people and the right skill sets in order to be able to do it. So.
Well, and I think like all of that is so spot on, but also I think that you identify that you need to have someone over that pediatric area and then you're over the adult area is huge, because one person to be able to manage both of that would be almost impossible. I mean, it'd be so hard. So I think that's huge as well. So yeah, when people are starting out, you need to envision, you're going to have to bring those people in to help support you if you think you're going to be able to do it all. So.
And letting go is really hard too, I think, in the beginning, right? Like, I think that letting go of control, relinquishing that control was really difficult. And I remember like having a conversation with my dad and he was just kind of like, listen, kid, you're at a crossroads. You either let go of some of this and bring people on, or you're going to have to be happy with where you are right now. And you're not going to get any bigger. It's not going to get any better. And you're going to, you know, continue to work 80 to 100 hours a week and it's not going to grow unless you let go of some of that control. And you know, and I think I had like talked with you at length about how hiring an assistant was one of the best things I ever did. Mm-hmm. As for the office stuff, that's not my bread and butter, you know, it's not where my skill set lies. And so to have somebody whose skill set is in, you know, that it is so incredibly helpful. So I can focus on programming and, you know, quality initiatives and therapy and what the markets look like. You know, it's just, you have to have some sort of supports. I think too, like finding out what you're not good at and then finding people to support you in that. So like finding you, for example, was huge for me. You know, I really needed that type of mentorship. Having like an accountant that can help guide you in your financial practices and you have access to them all the time. I mean, I email my accountant at 5 a.m, you know, freaking out about stuff in QuickBooks because I've made some sort of ridiculous mistake because I don't understand any of it. And then even, you know, we're going to be starting up with Brad, which I'm really excited about. Because you're not good at everything. And so you have to figure out like, okay, where am I not good? And now I need to put people in those places so that, you know, I'm going to do what I'm good at and other people are going to help me with the stuff I'm really not good at.
And that is so huge. And we need to figure out a way, Chelsea, to get other people to understand that, because I see so many therapists trying to do it all themselves and then they're drowning in it. And it's like, no, you need to have help for these different areas. You know, like, I know I hear all the time, like, I don't know how you can do it all. Well, I have plenty of, I mean, I have help. I could probably even use more help, but I have help to help me. It's not just a one person show. So I just, I mean, you with all of your success, I mean, you acknowledge that you need to surround yourself with the people to help you. The program director from the University of South Dakota, when I was getting my doctorate degree, one of the things she talked about all the time was getting the right people on the bus. You have to get the right people on the bus. And that's so important with your business. You have to have the right people and you have to be willing to bring on people to help you. And I love that about you. I also think you have to be willing to invest in your business, which you do. I mean, you know, so many people aren't willing to invest in their business and you are willing to invest in your business and do the programs or things that help you. So I don't know how we can get people to understand that you have to be able to do those things to get where you need to be. So I always kind of use the analogy.
Picture and small picture, right? So like, you know, yeah. If you're looking at it from a perspective of like, what are the right things to do and what's going to bring me from being a, you know, a private practice solo, you know, just self-employed to, you know, organizational leadership. Mm-hmm. I think that people need to understand, like, I work two jobs right now. You know, I manage my business and I teach. I don't do that because I necessarily need the income. I do it so I can take that income and then reinvest it back into my company. So I can build programs and then I can develop things that long-term are going to be exponentially more sustainable. You know, is it fun right now working two full-time jobs? No, right? There's plenty of days and I look at Sam and I'm like, just kill me because I don't want to do this. But you know, in the long run, I know that at the end of the day, what I'm doing is the right thing. I'm putting in the effort and the time now so I can take that money and put it into programs, learn the stuff I don't know, and then eventually, you know, be able to like take over the world. So it just it takes time, it takes money, right?
And you're going to. I know. That's so awesome. Okay, so let's jump back in time. When did you think you first wanted to start your own business?
So back in October of last year when PDPM hit and the home health agencies were starting to see how all of that was going, you know, we were being sat down and told that like there were going to be pay cuts and there was going to, you know, essentially that nurses were now the MVPs and it was done in a way that was extremely like, good luck getting a job. Good luck finding anything. This is the best you're going to get. And I was just like, no way is this the best that it gets. There's just no chance. And I remember coming home one day and I sat at my island with in my kitchen with my husband. And I said, I think I'm going to start my own practice. And he looked at me and he said, well, if there's anybody who can do it, it's going to be you, my dear. And so it was the first time that I, you know, had said it out loud. And when I said it to the right person, because it was that initial, like, yeah, like you have this. I was just really disappointed with how therapy was being limited. The amount of therapy was being limited. The type of therapy was being limited. I was watching people lose jobs left and right. Colleagues who were really good at what they do. I was watching people feel so insecure in their job. And people don't realize that insecure feeling of you don't know if you're going to have a job in 2 weeks or 2 months from now, it really impacts the quality of the care that you deliver. You know, it's consuming. So that was when I kind of started thinking like, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something besides this. So I kind of just started, you know, Googling around and I thought like, well, if I had contract work, then I could help out, you know, agencies. And I started taking a lot of courses on PDGM and what it meant. And when I did that, I started realizing that PDGM actually had its benefits. And occupational therapy specifically, I have seen and I have been told by multiple administrators that they don't see how OT fits in home care anymore. And I have to choke back my stroke when that happens. And I have to educate them on, well, you know, you see the whole OASIS document that dictates your reimbursement. If it's not done by an OT for that dressing and bathing section, the grooming section, you could be missing out on up to 20% of your income for OASIS. So once I started like understanding that I had to just speak people's languages, I was like, all right, I think I could make like a name for myself here. So that was kind of how it started. And then eventually, you know, I just kind of left where I was, and then started doing this and being able to teach and balancing it, you know, on a full-time perspective. So, but it was, I think initially there's always, you know, I took a course in my PhD about change and what causes change. And, you know, it's usually both an internal and an external thing that happens. So your external thing could be that, you know, markets, could be, you know, you get fired, could laid off, you're unhappy with your job. But then there has to be some sort of internal drive to like actually make the change significant and lasting. And for me, I wasn't satisfied with what this was supposed to be. And I knew that there needed to be more.
Awesome. So once you made that initial decision to start your business, then what were the kind of the next steps that you took?
So initially I had started and I had like done a program with a physical therapist who had operated a contract system, and I kind of, you know, put that together and started in that capacity, asked, you know, a couple of my colleagues to, you know, if they would do any work, and they had agreed. So we started kind of picking up contract work slowly but surely, going to different agencies and, you know, kind of pitching myself. This was pre-COVID, so I was able to walk into places and meet face-to-face with people. I also knew what the competitor was, and so I could kind of understand how I could be better, you know, and what I could provide that was more valuable. So that was kind of how it all started. And then when COVID happened, that was really when we were doing really, really well. And then it just kind of annihilated us because home health referrals dropped off the face of the planet. You know, people weren't going to the hospital. Miraculously, all of a sudden, people weren't having strokes and they weren't having heart attacks. And you were like, yeah, no, I think that they are. They're just, you know, in their house having these things. So it made things really, really difficult. And that was when I realized I could not rely on, you know, other agencies to be providing me with my main source of income. So yes, we could do contract work. Yes, it would be awesome to work, you know, and help people with the Medicaid, because, you know, that's a big population of people, but, you know, there's got to be a better way to get direct referral. And that was kind of when I started looking into MedB certification, started that process. Then I found you, thank God. And that really helped because, you know, it was really like, didn't really know how to do this. And there's a lot of, coming from the contract world, I didn't deal with insurance at all. I had that, you know, luxury of just sending my invoice to the agency and not really having to worry about it. So it was super helpful to have somebody help me guide my process with HelloNote, with Ability, with understanding what MAC is and a clearinghouse. And I had no idea what any of those things were. So if I didn't have that, I don't think I would be as successful, you know, not that I'm like uber successful yet, but I don't think I would be in the same place I am now.
Well, I mean, I just can't tell you how amazing it is, how much you have done and accomplished and how successful you are in that short of time. Also, can you talk a little bit about the assisted living piece and your Falls program and so forth? Because when did that really start to come into play?
So when I was working for the agency that I worked with prior, we had this one account established that they had initially come to us, and my director back then had said, you know, I want you to take this account and, you know, just make this kind of like your baby. So the facility that I was in, I was absolutely blessed to be given this opportunity because this facility is just amazing. They are an assisted living, but it's a locked memory care unit. And it's so different from anywhere else I've ever been. They eat, sleep, and breathe dementia care, which is my favorite, favorite, favorite thing. So I initially started working and building my relationship with this ALF long before I started my business, which was super helpful because then when I came to them, they said, you know, I said I was leaving my other place. They said, where are you going? We want you. So I was like, no problem. I paired up with a contract. I chose very meticulously a home health agency that would take their Med A's. And then I decided that we would also take Med B's. I had asked, you know, how other facilities, because essentially they've thrown out every therapy company that has walked in the door because they're meticulous, which is what I really appreciate about them because they provide really good care and they don't tolerate anything less than really great care. So I asked what, you know, what the mother company, what they were doing in other parts of their ALF. And they said, well, you know, they do these free screens to pick up Med B patients. And I was like, okay, can you get me a copy of it? It was extremely vague, very subjective, didn't really have any, you know, objective or standardized assessment at all. And at the end of the day, I didn't see how it added any value to the ALF. And all it did was drum up free business in what I felt was an unethical way. In addition to that, if you're working with Medicare patients, you really can't treat anybody for free. It's against the rules. So in that sense, it's just a big negative. So I decided, what is a way for me to build my Med B caseload, but do it in a way that was ethical and that was going to provide value to the ALF so that they don't leave. They don't ask me to leave. You know, they want me to be able to stay. So I started looking at one of our biggest problems in ALFs, which is falls, especially in memory care, because we have walkie-talkies who, you know, they're all over the place. They are never in their apartments, you know, but they do have significant, you know, disability when it comes to health concerns. So we have a lot of falls. Let's just put it that way. So I started looking at doing some root cause analysis work. I did a lot of research based on, you know, what were the primary causes of falls. I then looked at, you know, relationships between dementia and falling. And I created this program that would have two parts to it because I didn't feel like they could be separated. The screening part is the part that can be done by the facility. And that's basically, you know, questions that CNAs, nurses, you know, anybody who reviews a chart could do on that patient and be able to trigger a therapy referral. And then there's the part where I get the call most often, my patient had a fall. So I was wondering, like, how can I systematically review each fall and then give somebody interventions that can be done at the assisted living level, and then have a way to also build my caseload from these falls. So one of the biggest problems I see is that ALFs will say that a fall is caused by one problem. It's like, oh, well, they didn't have their walker. That's the one problem. And then I'm like, well, why didn't they have their walker? Well, it wasn't left near their bed. Well, why wasn't it left near their bed? Well, the staff didn't know that it needed to be left near their bed. Okay, so we have a staff breakdown, communication breakdown. We have an equipment breakdown. And then we have the fact that the patient is not using the walker. Because then I'll ask, well, what's the percentage of the time? They'll say 50% of the time. And I'm like, sounds like this patient needs more training with the device. So we created like a flow chart that goes through and asks questions about, you know, each of the different categories that really can impact falling. And it helps to be able to educate the assisted living on why these things happen and what can they do to prevent them from happening again, while at the same time generating referrals to therapy when it is needed. This way, we're not getting referrals just because someone had a fall. Because it's not that every patient who has a fall needs therapy. Should every fall be reviewed? Absolutely. We should understand why each one happened. But it doesn't necessarily mean that every single person needs one. So I think that the fact that we're trying to provide them with a product that can systematically look at something, it can be used as a quality initiative. So when the state or JCO comes in, they can use it to say, here's our quality initiative. Here's what we're doing to prevent falls. I use the CDC study guidelines to create the screening tools and to help build the program itself. So it's all based around the CDC guidelines, which I really like. So it has value for both them and the clinician. And then also we have a piece where you can use it to market to PCPs. So the screening tool can be used to help go to PCPs, let them know about what you do, how you're different, and then implement, you know, say things like, well, the CDC is recommending that these types of things are happening and we need to be able to account for them when it comes to fall prevention. And what are you doing to help with falls? Well, here's what I can do for you. And it's just creating partnerships that are mutually beneficial. And I think that that's kind of the biggest piece is that nobody's necessarily getting paid for these partnerships, which is why they are mutually beneficial. You're providing them with great service. They're providing you with clients. And at the end of the day, everybody is getting good care. So that's pretty much what we do.
I love it. And now talk a little bit about, because you've been doing this program and you implemented this, but now you're starting to train other therapists to use this in their practices. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So once I started doing this and I started realizing, because I built myself to a full caseload, my PTs a full caseload. So I started realizing like, oh, okay, like this could really work. And then I realized that I bet other clinicians probably could benefit from doing the same things. So I kind of formulated how the program works, why it's important. I created kind of an interactive module. So people have to, you know, do activities along the way for market analysis and, you know, to look at competitors in the area and to look at ALX in the area that they could target. And so the program really helps to go through and handle all of those situations like, well, this ALF already works with another provider. What do I say? And how do I show the value of these screening tools and how do I teach people? And it also helps to be able to build upon other services. So say the assisted living is having a couple people that they're really struggling with, or maybe their wellness programming is just not as strong as it needs to be. It provides an input for you to say, in addition to this, I'm going to give you this for free. I also am available for private consulting. So if you would like me to adapt your wellness program, or if you would like me to look at this specific case that you're having multiple falls on, you know, I can come in and consult on that. So it's just teaching clinicians how to use the fall program, how to build their caseloads, but really like how to build those partnerships in their community so that they brand themselves as a community ally and, you know, create their business based off of, you know, value and ethics, as opposed to a lot of these businesses that are out there, especially like in my neck of the woods with mobile outpatient, there's a lot of people who are building stuff off of garbage values. And the only people who really end up suffering in the end are the patients.
I love how everything always comes back to, you know, your patients and value care and putting them first and creating these programs for them. So if you guys are interested in this program, be sure, what's the best way? Just go to your website, or because we'll share all that information in our podcast link. And then also we've been sending out emails and posting it in our Next Level Facebook group as well, because I know quite a few people in our Therapy Business Builder program are taking part in the training as well. Going to your website, what's your website?
So superioroutcomesllc.com. You can go to that. You can find us on Facebook. The program is really great for people who are just starting their business because it's a great way to pick up a steady stream of clients. And I feel like that's what you struggle with initially when you're building your caseload. How do I get referrals? Well, this has potential. If you partner with one assisted living facility, you have the potential to have a full caseload if you do and you take care of that relationship with them. So, you know, for people who are just starting out and who are trying really hard to generate business, this is a fantastic program for you. And we do have a private Facebook group. And, you know, we use Trello boards in order to be able to move people through the program. And, I give direct access with myself if you, you know, have any questions or if you're having trouble or anything like that. So you can find us on Facebook, find us on our website. You can send me a message or email me, you know, whatever it is. If you have any questions at all, I would be more than happy to let you know, all the ins and outs of the program.
Yes, definitely reach out. I've had people contact me that they're like, I have a great connection with assisted living facility and I'm wanting to start my own practice. I'm like, I mean, that's so perfect if you have a good connection with assisted living facility. Okay, awesome. Tons of great information. Let's talk about your top five tips or recommendations that you have for therapists wanting to start their own practice.
So when I was thinking about these top five, I was thinking like from my initial experience right up until now. So I think my first one would probably say, go with your gut, because as clinicians, we are kind of conditioned in a way to go to school, graduate, work for an employer, stay where you are. And that's kind of the, you know, maybe there's a clinical ladder, maybe you become a supervisor, but that's kind of it. So if you go and you tell your friends who are also clinicians about something you're thinking about doing, they're naturally risk aversive. And so that's what I learned very quickly, is that a lot of the people that I surrounded myself were naturally risk adverse people. Find, you know, if your gut is telling you that you can do this and that, you know, you're not happy with what's going on and you need more out of your career because you went to school long enough for it. And, you know, like it provides you with a lot of, you know, internal fulfillment, then go for it. You know, find your people, join like groups like Next Level, where you're going to be in constant contact with positive reinforcement for this, and go with your gut. Because people around you, because of who we work with, are naturally risk adverse. It's just who we are in healthcare. So you kind of got to find people like Kara and the people in Kara's group to say like, hey, you can do this, and then just have someone kick you in the butt to go do it.
Love it.
Yeah. And then I kind of already touched upon my second tip, which was the consultants and mentorship. So, you know, like I wrote down my strengths and weaknesses one day and I really looked at what I was good at. And then I basically erased it and was like, okay, that doesn't matter. What really matters is what you're bad at. What are you not educated in? And then you need to be able to create a plan. So are you going to take courses for this? Are you going to hire a consultant? Are you going to, you know, is it beneficial for you to have someone do your taxes and take care of your books for you? You know, you need a mentor. I don't care what you say. You need a mentor. You need someone who's going to guide you and you can bounce ideas off of, no matter how successful you are. You need that partnership. So that was definitely my second piece of advice, was figure out what you're not good at and find out how you're going to either become good at it or insert people so that, you know, you're not missing anything. Cause if you miss something when you own your own business, it's high risk and you can't put yourself out there like that. I think the third tip would be, if you're thinking about doing this, mentally prepare to grind. I think that people who get in and they're all of a sudden like, oh God, this is a lot of work and I'm overwhelmed and I don't know what to do about this. If you mentally prepare yourself to grind, you're going to be okay. if the grind comes as a shock, I think that that's when, you know, people can tend to back off and say, I don't think I can do it, and fall back into that regular pattern of 9 to 5. I'll just do this because it's safe and it's comfortable. But if you commit to the mental grind, knowing like, okay, I am going to work like a dog, but then eventually I'm going to have more time with my children and I'm going to be financially free and I'm going to get more out of what I do and I'm going to be more fulfilled. If you remember this, I think that kind of is a problem with my generation, is that like instant gratification is rampant, you know, it's like a problem. So knowing that, just be ready to grind. And if you have that mindset, you're going to be fine. You're going to be completely fine. My fourth piece would be, innovation. So when we created our mission, you know, I wrote down all the things that were really important to me, and quality and value is obviously always number one at the top of my list. I think it should be at the top of everybody's list, but that's just me. But the piece that's going to make us different, you know, there's a lot of healthcare providers out there. How are you going to be different from other people? It needs to be established. So, I'm constantly trying to find ways to do things that, other practices or agencies say that they can't do because of blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm going to find a way to do them. And I don't know how I'm going to do it just yet, but I'm going to create a way to make it work. So I think that that's kind of the piece, is that there's always a solution when you come across a problem, but you know, it's very few people that actually will sit there and find the solution and then figure out their path on how they're going to get there. So it's okay. I have whiteboards all over my office of like ideas and things that I want to be able to do. And then I just kind of create roadmaps of how eventually I'll get there. It takes time and it can be super frustrating, but I think at the end of the day, it's what sets you apart from other practices that might be in your area, in competitors. And then I would say the final piece would be set goals. So I think it's really easy for you to get caught up in how hard this can be sometimes. And you may feel like, I have days where I feel like I worked so hard from like 4 in the morning until 10 at night, and I don't feel like I got anything done, not one thing. And so that can be super discouraging. So I started keeping a better set of like short-term and long-term goals. I have boards that say living on a prayer. And then every time something like good happens, I'll write it down just to remind myself that even though it may feel like things are really hard and you're not being successful, you really actually are. You know, sometimes I have to look, and I looked at my, you know, our revenue and like what we have, you know, billed out, not necessarily profit, but what we've billed out. And I was blown away that it was like over $160,000. And we started technically getting income in like February. So
you know, it's amazing.
It's like crazy. But there are moments when you don't think that that's happening because you're caught up in, you know, what feels like you're not making any progress with things, because it's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait for so much. So set goals and then smash them. When you do, celebrate, do something good for yourself that says like, you did it, you know, like you hired your first full-time employee. Oh my gosh, well done. Let's go have a cocktail and celebrate, because it's just like, it's just you. You're all by yourself and it can be super isolating. So unless you're, you know, setting goals and then checking them off your list, you can get a little bit lost sometimes. So, you know, make those goals specific and then tag them.
This is all gold, you guys. I mean, I just love it all. Go with your gut. So I'm just going to review. Go with your gut. And again, people are risk adverse, and I don't want to sound rude, but negative, pessimistic. And you need to surround yourself with positive people, and it can be done. That's just huge. Consultants and mentorship. Again, I mean, that was one of the mistakes I made when I started. I was like, I can do it myself. And also I was trying to find mentorship, but really couldn't find it. But it wasn't until I, you know, did a $30,000 mastermind program that I really was able to grow and do way more. And I absolutely love when you talked about your strengths and weaknesses and how you said you erased your strengths and focused on your weaknesses. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, we need to focus on our weakness and figure out how we are going to get those changed from weaknesses to strengths and how we can employ people to do that. And I think that's what, I mean, I agree. I do that with like all of our different programs. And that's why like our Therapy Business Builder program isn't just one person, because I'm sorry, not one person knows everything. I mean, it takes a team to do it. And being willing to bring in other people is so important. So love that. And I'm huge into partnerships. And then the mentally preparing to grind. I do think some people maybe, I don't know what is a good word for it, but basically think they can just start their own business and it's going to be easy. And that's not the case. You have to grind. And then when it gets too tough, they're like back out and then they don't get anywhere. So, you know, one of my coaches just said, you know, you have to be relentless all the time, you know, and so many people go strong and then they stop and give up. So, and innovation, I think that's huge. How are you going to stand out? I mean, and look at all of the different things you've done to be innovative in your areas. And I like the roadmap, you know, what do you want to do? And then making a roadmap to get there. And again, that's Greg Todd talks about roadmaps and how he uses that with everything. And then goals. I mean, you have to have goals. I found when I was cleaning up my office a couple of weeks ago, I had found a sheet with goals I had done about a year ago. And it's so awesome to look at this and be like, oh, I accomplished all of these. I always tell people to check in your, so you see them all the time. But yeah, that's huge. So many amazing tips. And you guys, again, Chelsea started in 2019. I mean, like a year ago. I mean, October, November.
I don't think we became like an official LLC until January 7th of 2020.
Okay.
So yeah. Like my ideas happened in December, but yeah. You know, like nothing, I don't think we received our first, I didn't receive a first paycheck until maybe February. So, I mean, it hasn't been that long. And if you want something, you can have it. It's just a matter of figuring out, you know, like how much time are you going to dedicate to it? And then, you know, how are you going to be different from other people who are trying to do the same thing?
And how committed are you really? I mean, I don't know, when you invest in something more, then that usually makes you a little more committed. I know for me, when I invested, you know, into the mastermind program, that was a $30,000 mastermind, I kicked butt right away because I'm like, I need to get that money back. You know, if I invested this, I'm going to make it work. So like I went full speed ahead because I invested fully in myself. If you don't actually invest fully in your business, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. No, there has to be some, you have to have like some sort of stake in the game, you know, and I think it's just, again, it kind of goes back to mindset. You know, if you're not committed, if you're not 100%, you know, I think that when I look at the needs of my family, and I don't know about you, but I am way more willing to work 80 to 100 hours a week for my kids than I am to work for somebody else. And, you know, I just think that that's one of those pieces that when you are given this gift of an opportunity, because not everybody can take an opportunity like this, but if you have the skill set to do something incredible like this, it's going to be based upon whatever you put into it is what you're going to make back, you know? And I think that when you invest money, you know, not just time, but money, it's like your skin is in it. And so, you know, you move through the program, you're going to move through it really fast. I remember like going through you know, the beginning of the next level program and just wanting to just sit and crush as much of it as I could because I had invested in the program and I wanted to get back every single penny that I possibly could and knew that it was possible. So I do think that when you're constantly investing in yourself and in your business, it's going to lead in paying dividends, you know, absolutely pay back.
And one thing you just mentioned, when you're working for yourself versus someone else, I mean, I spent 8 years like putting my heart and soul into teaching. I mean, I'd be at my office till midnight or 1 a.m. sometimes, or I remember the first year I'd be up until like 3 a.m. trying to create everything for it. And then finding out that, you know, they don't really appreciate you like you really think they should or do. And it's just kind of a blow. So why not put all of that time and effort into your own business where you obviously are going to 100% appreciate it?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think too, like I feel like there's a confidence piece too that, you know, a lot of people will say to me, like, I could have never done something like that. And I'm like, why? You know, like in my opinion, I'm not any smarter or, you know, I don't have any advantages that other people don't have. I think it's just the confidence to be able to do so. And, you know, I talk about how like my son has taught me so many things that I would have never done this if it wasn't for him. But he showed me what I was capable of, you know, emotionally and mentally. So I knew that I could do this when I set out to do it because I had felt like I had already laughed in the devil's face a few times. And so, you know, I think that it takes time for people to build that confidence in themselves, and then they need the right people around them. So you take that initial step. Now you need people to keep like feeding your confidence because there's going to be like, you know, setbacks. There's always going to be setbacks, but how you respond to them, you know, really depends upon your support system and not, you know, trying to do it alone because it's super isolating. No, once you get into it, nobody knows. It's like a baby, you know, nobody cares about it as much as you do, you know? And I laugh. My husband is just like, you're nuts, you know, like, and he sees how hard I work for it, you know, and he's ridiculously supportive. But until I had someone in my office with me all the time, I felt like totally alone and like nobody could get it. Nobody could understand the pressures that I was truly under to provide for my family and to make this work and to pay back for my programs that I bought. And like, so once, you know, once I started being able to talk on platforms like this and finding other people, then I was like, ah, I'm not alone. Other people are doing this. I got it, you know? So.
Yes, no, that's huge. And let's give a little shout out to your son because he's absolutely adorable. And how old is he now?
He's 4. He is
4. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
he's so cute.
Because I love kids. But I avoid pediatrics because I feel like I live that pediatric world. So, you know, when it comes to like what I choose to branch into pediatrics myself personally, probably not. Cause I'm like always, you know, I'm ABAing and I'm OTing and I'm PTing and I'm nursing all the time. You know, I feel like it's like constant in our house. But I think that I've learned something that is absolutely invaluable. And so like the empathy of a parent who understands what it's like to have a child with a disability is strength that nobody could understand. And until you live it, and if people are watching who have a child with disability, you're like sitting there like, this lady knows what I'm talking about, because it is so difficult. It can be just really, really difficult. So if you have that, I can feel for parents, you know, I feel for them like, where, you know, like I've heard colleagues in my past lives working at other places say like, oh, you know, this person's family is crazy. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, yeah, no, I don't think so. Because if I was that person's caregiver, I'd be looking like a nut too. But I know how I look, you know, when I'm trying to advocate for him and when I'm fighting for him, I don't even care, You know, I don't care who I have to steamroll and how many people I have to fire. I don't care. So I can really appreciate that in my patients, in their family members, in their caregivers. And I have, I think, extra like emotion and tied to it just because of him. So I'm so thankful for the journey because, you know, sometimes you're sitting there like, Lord, I don't know what you've got going on up there, but I'm just going to sit here and let you teach me. But it's incredible what your outside experiences. People will say like, don't let it feed into your professional life. And I 100% disagree. You know, my personal life fuels my professional life on the 100% basis. So, you know, he's incredible. And, you know, I have a daughter too, and my family is, I am who I am because of them. And if things were different, I don't think I would be here having this conversation with you at all. I think I would still just be kind of sitting in my comfortable 9-to-5 job, probably relatively unhappy because I wouldn't have felt like I could do it.
So it gave me goosebumps. So how about talking about how has it made it easier being at running your own job so you can be around more versus when you were at the 9-to-5 job?
Yeah. So I think right now with COVID, things are just strange, right? Everybody's in a weird place. Also, I'm finding that some people have more restriction than others. So for example, like we have ridiculous restriction in Rhode Island here right now. So I have been able to be home a lot more and be able to run things like I'm in my office, which is in my house right now. And you know, I have that luxury of being able to be here. I can work, you know, I'll get up at like 4:30 and start my day until, you know, so I can get a chunk done when nobody is awake. And then I can be there with them, you know, in the morning and get everybody going and situated. So that part has been really nice. The flexibility to schedule my life around his is necessary for me. It always has been, and it probably always will be. It's a lot better now because he's in a much better place health-wise than he was before. But it's definitely the goal of mine with hiring this, you know, someone to run the pediatric side is to eventually by the end of, you know, by halfway through, once I get to the spring of 2021, I, you know, want to be able to step back and kind of be at like that macro level and, you know, kind of let things be on cruise control and handle the situations that I need to, so that I can spend my time with my family as much as humanly possible. You know, have I made some concessions this first year? Yes. You know, like 100%, I'd be definitely lying if I said no. You know, but I'm really lucky that I have a support system that can help me and put that in place. But the end goal is to just be able to have that time flexibility piece, because time is way more valuable than money will ever be.
Yeah. And was like key to me. I mean, I've been lucky enough. Like when I did do the 9-to-5, I was pretty flexible 9-to-5. Like for my first several years working, I just worked 3 days a week so I could be home with the kiddos, but I was still able to kind of flex time so I didn't miss anything. And then when I went to teaching, I mean, that was great because, you know, you have your summers off and I was with my kids all the time. But nothing beats working for yourself when you can totally set your schedule so you absolutely do not miss anything. And, you know, I go to my kids' events and I see, you know, other parents not there or whatever. And it just is like, I don't get, you know, cause I mean, I couldn't stand missing any of it, but that's, you know, they're my number one. So I schedule everything around what they have going on. So that's huge, and being able to do that. So
I think like that's the end, you know, that's definitely the end game for me, is that I want to be able to have more time to be able to be with them. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I would have had to just kind of keep working the same amount, and then I've only would have made the same thing, you know, and there would have been no progression of any kind. So I think that was the piece for me that I really wanted to see get better. So if I sacrifice up front and I work really hard and I set things up in a way that we're going to end up being successful, then, you know, in the long run, like I get to be, at my kids' soccer games and things like that, because that's really, really important, to me.
Well, you're setting everything up. I mean, so awesome. I mean, I can't tell you how many people that were like, you need to get help. You need to hire someone to help you, or you can't do this all by yourself. You need to invest in yourself. You need to learn this instead of trying, I mean, like everything you're doing is phenomenal. I love it. So I hope we can get this podcast out, so as many, many therapists that are wanting to start their business need to listen to it. So I so much appreciate your time. This has been awesome. I will share Chelsea's website and contact information below. Again, if you do have a mobile practice or are interested, I definitely check out her Falls program. I am attending it. It's tonight is her first live with that. So we'll share all of that information as well. So thank you everyone for watching and listening to the Next Level Occupational Therapy podcast. Please make sure you join our free Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook group. And if you want to get your business up and going with as much support and help to get you where you need to be, check out our Therapy Business Builder program. Have a fabulous day.
Thank you for listening to today's show, which is sponsored by our Therapy Business Builder program, where we help healthcare professionals start the business of their dreams from the ground up. Also, be sure to join our free Next Level Occupational Therapy Facebook group. And for even more support, guidance, and training, check out our Next Level Visionary Membership group. Time to level up, occupational therapy professionals.